Hi, everybody. This is Shamira Young from Zenjoyable.com, and I'm so excited for our interview today. Thank you so much for joining us for our Pro Photographer interview series, episode number one with Ken Schultz, photographer and instructor. Just to give you a little bit of background before we get into the interview, Ken is the creator of the Easy DSLR Digital Photography course. He set up a blog on digital photography in December 2010 and has helped hundreds of new DSLR buyers with his ebook, Digital SLR Buyer's Guide. After many questions from new DSLR buyers, Ken realized that a basic DSLR course was needed to fill the gaps in photography knowledge required to get great photos with a DSLR. After 8 months of production, Easy DSLR was launched in September 2011. So join us for our interview. Let's get started. I just want to thank you, Ken Schultz, for being with us today. I'm so excited to pick your brain as we learn more about the profession of photography from a true professional such as yourself. So thank you again for being here with us.
I'm glad to be on the show.
And first of all, I want us to learn about you, about yourself, your background. So tell us how you ended up where you are now as a photographer and how your background really just led up to that.
Okay, well, I was almost an accidental photographer because when I was a kid, I got one of these really cool little telescopes. It was kind of cheap and everything, but I wanted to take photographs of the stars and the moon and everything through the telescope. Mm-hmm. And I found the only way I could do that was to get one of these cameras where you can remove the lens and you actually look through the lens, which is a single lens reflex. Mm-hmm. So I ended up getting a secondhand one of those. And then that's what got me started in photography, because then I just started playing more with the camera and got really interested in taking photos. And the astronomy side kind of got left behind, and I experimented more with photography. So I basically became a lifelong photographer, taking photos of just family trips and things around the house and whenever we'd travel. And then much later on, I got into marine mammal biology. I became a marine biologist because I always had an interest in animals and that as well. And I found I was taking a lot of photographs on the boats and things, because we actually had to identify the animals by photographs.
Okay.
So I'd take photographs of the fins of the dolphins, the fin on the top of the dolphin, and that would identify particular individuals. And whale tails, that's how they photographed the tails of whales to identify them. So I was, and also I'd take beautiful sunsets and ocean shots generally, because we had mm-hmm. these good cameras on board. Now, one of the things, though, when we were doing that kind of photography is you had to have a really, like, it had to be a good camera, but it had to be very basic. You couldn't have a lot of electronics because of the salt air.
Oh,
so
okay,
I was using a Nikon, or a Nikon, as you say here, which was just a fully manual camera. So you had to actually set the exposure, like the shutter speed and the aperture, manually all the time. There was
wow.
no auto mode on this camera I had. It was a real basic. And we would take slide film. So we'd load slide film in the back and take photos, because that had the best quality for what we were doing.
Okay.
So I guess the point is it really taught me, you know, the basics of photography, like the real core basics, because I couldn't rely on the camera's auto modes because it didn't have any. So and then I'd use the same camera for taking sunsets and travel. So I became quite, you know, quite adept at just setting things manually all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, and then much later on, I kind of resisted the whole digital phase, because after taking slide film has really good kind of resolution and quality.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me till 2005 before I finally made the leap to digital, and that's because
really?
Canon brought out the 5D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I played with like cheap ones before that, but not like a really good quality digital SLR camera,
mm-hmm.
something that could be equivalent or at least better than my slide SLR camera.
Mm-hmm.
So finally when the 5D came out from Canon, I thought, okay, this is time to jump into that. And it was actually at the beginning when I just met my wife, or that was going to be my future wife, in Hawaii. And we got married like a few months later. It was just kind of this chance meeting. And we decided to go into the wedding business together, because she loved wedding dresses and I like photography. So she said, well, why don't you take the photos and do the video and I'll do the dresses and all the, you know, the ceremony stuff. So we ended up for like 3 years doing a wedding business in Hawaii. We were located in Honolulu and my wife had all these amazing dresses. She had like eco couture dresses from Canada.
Oh my goodness.
So it was really, really quite a interesting diversion from marine mammal work. So
I have to ask, did you know what you were getting into when you decided to dive into wedding photography?
No. in the sense of, that was when my learning curve really started. Because, I mean, it's okay being a photographer on your own time, but suddenly when you have to do a wedding, you know, the pressure's on. So I actually had to learn how to use these DSLR cameras and the best settings for these cameras really quickly. I mean, I was fortunate. I knew a couple of friends who had done weddings,
They
gave me some real key tips at the beginning, and that really helped.
Yeah.
And one of the key tips was, you know, what gear to get. And they said, yep, this camera, this Canon 5D is, you know, the best on the market right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want for good quality. And they suggested some good lenses as well. So I got some really good lenses at the time. So then, yeah, so the learning curve was quick. But, I got there and a lot of our brides were pretty happy with the packages we did. In fact, I designed fine art albums. So I'd actually get their photos and within a couple of days I'd have an online version of their fine art album.
Oh, very nice.
That they could flip through. And so even before they got any other prints, they'd see the album first.
And that probably wasn't, the whole online album, I guess, phenomenon probably wasn't as big as it is today. I think it's kind of expected, at least with the people I talk to have an online album that they can look at. But
but
back in 2005, it probably wasn't as expected, I should say.
Yeah, I just don't think there was as much technology and options out there.
Yeah.
Because the one I did, I would actually have to, I used a bit of software that would create the album and then I'd have to upload it to my server. It wasn't like an online service. I actually had to, you know, do some little web stuff in the background, upload it to my FTP server and all that, and then send in the link. So it was very manual.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm sure there's nowadays there's a ton of options to have that published.
Yeah, I think we're a little bit spoiled today. The things we take for granted, yeah.
Too much access. Like, which one would you choose now? That's,
oh my goodness.
That's kind of the trick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was very successful in it. And that I guess I had to dig deep into how to use DSLR cameras in those wedding days. Just learn fast. You don't want to upset a bride. So you have to make sure those photos are good.
Absolutely.
So I think there were some key techniques I learned back then that have carried me through. And then afterwards, we actually, around 2008, the economy wasn't doing so well, and we shut the business down because a lot of our business was based on overseas travelers to Hawaii, destination weddings. So that kind of slowed down a lot, and we decided, okay, let's shut that down. And we moved to Montana. So we went from Hawaii to Montana in the middle of winter, which was quite interesting.
I'm sure it was a shock.
Our first Christmas, we had minus 17 degrees.
Ooh. So, that's cold even for Michigan.
So it was a shock to the system, but at the same time, stunningly beautiful. And that's, so I never, even though I was almost a little burnt out on the stress of having to do wedding photography, I must be honest, because it was quite a stressful job.
Were you shooting them yourself?
I beg your pardon?
I'm sorry, did you have a backup photographer with you, or were you the only photographer at the wedding?
No, I was going solo.
Oh my goodness.
And towards the end, I actually started outsourcing some of the actual photography gigs, and then I'd get the photos and still do the albums because that was a little bit less stress. But when I got to Montana, I still, even though I was a little bit burnt out on the wedding photography, I was still interested in photography, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Montana actually inspired me to like get more into the photography because such, you know, stunningly beautiful country. Like, I hadn't really lived in a place with like snow on the peaks all around you and things like that, and amazing rivers. So it kind of inspired me to get more into the nature photography. And then around that time, I guess I'm looking at 2009 into 2010, these cameras started getting much cheaper, all these DSLR cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. People were buying these cameras, and like family members and friends were starting to buy these DSLR cameras because they were getting affordable. So it wasn't just the professionals anymore. And I started getting lots of questions, of course, because they knew that I took photos, and it's like, how did we do this, and what mode's this? And and my sister in Australia bought one, and my sister-in-law bought one, and some friends bought one. So I get all these questions. I started thinking, well, maybe I should do a video for them and send it to them. Yeah.
Okay.
Because that way I don't have to answer the same questions all the time. And then the more I thought about it, I thought, well, maybe that's an option. You know, create a whole course, and then maybe there's other beginners out there that might want to watch that. And then I started looking into online marketing and just the whole idea of actually creating a business online rather than doing a, you know, like a service business. And that's when I started a small blog, and then I did some surveys to see if there was any interest in a course on digital SLR photography, and that's kind of how I grew my audience. And then I spent the next 8 months generating the course. So that's kind of what got me into the teaching side of things.
Huh. Okay. That's quite a journey. That's quite a journey. I know the first wedding that I ever did, I had the flu that morning. The morning of the wedding, I woke up and I knew I had the flu. And there's no way you can call the bride and say, hey, I'm not going to make it to your wedding today, you know? But yeah, made it through it. I had a backup photographer. Hats off to you for shooting all those years by yourself, because the weddings are quite a beast to take on. Now, would you say, as far as what you're currently doing, what you're currently the most invested in, are you still doing photography shoots, or are you focusing on the online courses that you're creating, or is it a mixture of both?
I've actually transitioned more just into the online teaching now.
Okay.
I mean, occasionally if a gig comes up and it's like, okay, that's amazing, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
But a few months ago, someone wanted me to photograph. It was someone, a friend, and they wanted some photographs of an apartment they were going to sell. And it's just because I knew them, I did it, you know, kind of as a quick job just to keep the tools and the skills sharpened. But to be honest, just the marketing online, I actually want to create more courses as well. So that's really taking up all my time now. It's become a full-time job, just, you know, teaching online and marketing online.
Okay.
So what I do now is whenever I go to a shoot, it's for inspiration so that I can either blog about it or find extra techniques that I can hand over to my current subscribers. So sometimes I add bonus videos so for current members who actually bought my course, I'll add a video in the course. So it kind of, I don't do it all the time, but there's that, at least it's easy to just build on the course over time so people get these bonuses. And also ideas for new courses, like I'm working on a bird photography course just for beginners and just the basics. I don't want to go sort of so deep that you have to be a, you know, ornithologist to really appreciate it. You know,
right.
You don't have to get a degree in it. It's just like, okay, for beginners interested in capturing nice photographs of birds, what are the essentials that you need to do that? And I think I've had a lot of my members say that they'd be interested in that. So what I do is I tend to go out just through my own inspiration. Like if I see a bunch of birds or like all the fall colors now. I went on a photo shoot the other day in Portland. At the moment, we have these beautiful fall colors.
I bet it was.
And, you know, just it inspires me to go out there with my camera just because I want to capture some of those, you know, colors and those moments.
Yeah.
So I go out and I just shoot them, and then I set up a blog post about it. And then quite often when I do that, like for instance, when I caught these photographs of this mother swallow flying into this little bird box that she had the babies in.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally stood there for 20 minutes waiting for her to come at the right angle. You know
what? I saw that photo on your website earlier today. That was beautiful. It had the different progression stacked onto. Oh my goodness.
I had it come in as a sequence. And that took 20 minutes of patience to capture that.
That was stunning.
And there were some tricks to it, and I actually put it in that blog article on that little post. There's a few tricks that enabled me to catch that, you know, that moment and that sequence. So when I came across that, I thought, well, this would be something useful. And then I, you know, created into a little mini tip, kind of a little mini tutorial, and then I posted online. But I want to eventually fill that out into a, a full bird course. Like when I thought about it, I look back at my photographs from, you know, when I go to the beach or wherever, and I have a lot of bird photos. It's, you know, there's something about, you know, capturing a bird either in flight or, you know, a bird you haven't seen very often.
Yeah. It's,
you know, and I think a lot of people have that feeling, like, oh, wow, cool bird, you know, let's get it, you know, capture it with the camera, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those universal topics that, that really catches people's interest, you know. So yeah. I worked at a bird center for a while, and it was before I was into photography, but there is something about birds, you know, even more stunning is when you can actually catch them in a photograph. So, and actually,
yeah, it's the colors and the variety and things like that. Yeah.
And I do want to give you a chance to talk about your online courses, if you so choose. And in the show notes, I want to link to your courses as well. I know you've got quite a few of them out there, but are there any that you want to highlight for people?
Of my courses?
Yes.
Well, I have on my own website, I have my Easy DSLR course, and it's really at two levels. There's the basic level, the beginner's level, which I call Blue Membership, and that really gives you all the essentials that you're going to need, like shutter speed, aperture, exposure, composition tips, and things like white balance and depth of field. Depth of field is like a crucial tool for that photographers use to get creative shots. It's
absolutely
basically it's a concept that is really separates a lot of professionals from amateur photographers. It's just that being able to control depth of field. So that's included in that. And then I have some basic flash tips, not super in-depth, but just real practical flash tips that you can use just with your, either your pop-up flash or if you have an external flash. And I don't go into too much as far as like studio lighting and everything. It's more just flash, you know, simple one unit flash kind of photographs. And then for people who are interested, then I have the advanced course. Now that's on my website, it's called Gold Membership. So you get the blue, which is the basics, and then you get an extra 6 hours of training. And in that I have a bunch of creative scenarios where you can really test out those skills you've learned from the basic part of the course. And actually, one thing I didn't mention is I've created the photo triangle, and what that is just a way of kind of getting a bird's eye view or a map of how all the concepts are connected to create a great photo.
Okay.
And why I thought that was useful is because people can actually have that overview in front of them and see what's going to be covered in the course, and then later on it becomes a reference, like, oh yes, you know, aperture affects depth of field and aperture affects exposure, things like that, just like a little cheat sheet. And so then in the advanced gold member videos, I do like I have better portraits, I have macro photography, so all these like little kind of niche photography areas that people might be interested in. Time lapse, where you can create those cool kind of videos from a whole sequence of photos, and then HDR photography, which some people are a little intimidated by. It's high dynamic range.
That's getting big now. Yeah.
Yeah. Now they're built into a lot of cameras, so it's getting easier to do that.
Yeah. Even cell phone cameras, which I'm a little bit of a, it's you know, they have those settings built into some cell phone cameras now.
Yeah, like the iPhone. And,
and that's a little, I don't know. I won't go on any kind of rant right now, but it's so accessible now. Everyone has an iPhone or a cell phone, and that's a whole nother story, but
But that actually doing HDR with a digital SLR camera, though, it is actually, there are a lot of times when that's really useful. Like for instance, real estate photographers taking, like if you take a photograph inside a room and you have a beautiful view outside the window, without using that technology, you're going to have this either perfectly exposed room and a blown out scene out the window where you don't even see any detail.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's a real good example of when you use that. But I find that even just travel photography and just sometimes landscape photography, I think, like if I'm in a scene where there's a nice like avenue of trees and there's like a background sky that's quite bright relative to under the trees, then I take a few exposures and I use that technique, because otherwise I'm not really going to capture that range of light.
Right.
Because it's amazing what the brain can do, or the mind. Like, yeah, when you look at a scene, your mind is constantly adjusting, mm-hmm, and then you take a photograph, one photograph, and it doesn't capture what you really experienced.
You wonder why it doesn't match. Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually like that technique. I like it for the fact that it gets closer to what you have in your mind when you're at that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I use it mostly. Some people use that HDR to get like really fruity kind of electric photos. I don't really use it for that much, but I mean, you can if you want something arty, but I prefer it just to try capture what the mind sees at the time.
Yeah. I think some situations call for different things. I worked with a magazine where you have a cool shot of a motorcycle, for example, and sometimes for the particular article, they wanted, like you put it, the fruity kind of photo, but other times, you know, that's not always necessary. I think it can get overdone to a certain extent. But when it's used correctly, it really can be an asset. So,
Oh, another thing too, just on the goal course, so I go through all those creative scenarios, then I dive into a bit of editing, and mm-hmm, it's basic editing and some advanced editing, and I demonstrate using some free software online as well as Photoshop.
Oh, okay.
And I just recently added a Lightroom tutorial, and it's just like a real quick Lightroom tutorial on how to get a real dull scene and really give it a bit of pop to make it look more dramatic. And why I added that is because I find I'm using more Lightroom more and more. It used to be something I thought was interesting, but mm-hmm, I didn't quite know how it was going to fit in my workflow because I mostly use Photoshop.
Okay.
But the more I've dived into it, and actually I came across a particular course that really helped, and it's by a friend, Phil Steele. We kind of promote each other's courses a bit. And Phil Steele at Steele Training has an amazing Lightroom course. And I actually watched it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, I need to get to the bottom of this Lightroom. How's it going to help me?
Mm-hmm.
And I went through his course. And now my whole workflow has shifted so that I'd say I use Lightroom 80 to 90% of the time to process my photos.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And only when I need something tricky, like really a lot of fix-up, or maybe if I need to clone something or whatever, something really mm-hmm tricky, then I'll dive into Photoshop. But now Lightroom, they're adding more and more tools too. So they're starting to replace more and more of the things that I'd have to go to Photoshop for. I'm finding it's more and more of those actual tools and techniques are available in Lightroom. So I'm finding that a super useful program right now.
That's good to know. You actually beat me to the punch. I was going to ask you about your post-production workflow.
The interesting thing is, though, it seemed like when it first came out, it was really just a catalog. It was mm-hmm almost like an extension of Bridge in Adobe,
mm-hmm,
like a really quick way to, you know, categorize your photographs and also rate them and filter them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had this one of my members, Andy from the UK, he went to Disneyland with his family. He was one of my first members, actually. And he went to Disneyland with his family and took like 3,000 photographs or something.
Oh, my goodness.
Something amazing.
Uh-huh.
And got back and was suddenly like thinking, well, how am I going to filter this all down? And I actually put him onto Lightroom, and he said it really helped him because it was just a real quick way of reducing it down to his best photos.
Okay.
You know, because when you're confronted by so many, you need a quick way of cataloging and, mm-hmm, and rating them. But I think initially Lightroom was really geared for that, but more and more they've added tools now where you can actually do a complete workflow in there.
Hmm.
You know, we can actually fix up exposures and noise and a lot of the basic things, but more advanced things where you can actually do effectively what would, like when you take a landscape photograph, there's a technique where you use a filter, a graduated filter, where the top's darker than the bottom.
Okay.
And the idea is if you have a landscape and the sky's really bright,
mm-hmm,
and you expose for the sky, the foreground's going to be too dark. So mm-hmm you put this graduated filter on it. And so now Lightroom has the ability to do that afterwards, especially when you're using with a RAW file, because a RAW file has extra information in there anyway. Mm-hmm. So you bring in a RAW file in Lightroom and you drag this, you know, virtual filter down to darken the sky and even out the exposure.
Okay.
So tools like that are really making it super useful for my workflow now.
So I wanted to ask you, what, as far as the tools of the trade, what is your typical go-to gear for a shoot, or if you go out to photograph the autumn leaves or anything like that?
Okay, well, I started mostly with the Canon 5D, but I got interested in video at some point as well, so I bought myself a Canon 60D.
Okay.
So 60D, which is quite an affordable camera. It's under $1,000 for the body, and you usually get quite a good deal with different lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought I'd try that out, and it's a crop sensor, so it's not a full-frame sensor like the 5D.
Okay.
So it's actually 1.6 times smaller, the actual sensor at the back. But it does fantastic video, and I kind of fell in love with the video side of things. So now when I go on a shoot, I generally take this the 60D, and then I have a wider angle lens, which is a 16 to 35 millimeter lens, which is a f2.8. So it's a pro lens, and it has a really wide aperture. And I have my 70 to 200 millimeter f2.8. And that's what those lenses I actually bought during the wedding business days, but I'm still hanging on to them now.
Okay.
Now, I find that with the crop sensor camera, like the 60D, which will be the same for like a T3i or a T4 or a T5i, they keep adding numbers there, is that around a 16 or 17 to 35 or 40 millimeters is one of the best lenses to keep on the camera most of the time. Because when I had the 5D, I've mostly had a 24 to 70 millimeter. I found that the most versatile range for the full frame sensor.
Mm-hmm.
But with the crop sensor, if you put on a 16 to 35, you're multiplying that by 1.6, and it ends up being close to that 24 to 70 range.
Mm.
So I think it's that range of focal lengths that are most useful. So now basically that 16 to 35 sits on my 60D most of the time. And then when I have to have a longer shot, which I like for portraits, when I'm taking portrait shots, I like to stand back at a distance and then zoom in on the subject, because you get that really nice blurred background.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And you get more candid shots too. So so with the 70 to 200 now, putting that on the 60D, you get a little bit more reach as well. So that actually becomes practical for some wildlife shots as well.
I
usually pack those two lenses. And even though I have the 24 to 70, I usually put that aside because I want to get other items in there. Like I usually always take my external flash in case I need to light up the scene a little bit more. Even if it's daylight, I sometimes use fill flash.
What kind of flash are you using?
I'm using a 580EX. It's a Canon 580EX.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There's newer models out now. There's the 6 something. I forget which model it is, but they've updated that flash a few times. But this one has all the wireless features that I need.
Mm-hmm.
It can actually trigger and can be triggered from my camera. Like my 60D has built-in a wireless function, so I can actually hold my flash off the camera and it'll be triggered. And it also has a master function where I can trigger other flashes.
Okay, yeah.
So it's kind of, for me, I don't do a lot of studio work, so I don't actually have a lot of, where you have two or three external flashes firing off. So I haven't really dived too deep into studio work. But if I do, I can certainly just add an extra flash and I'll have quite a capable system.
Yeah,
as
it's really handy.
And a couple more things I normally take on with me is I have this white balance disc called an Expo disc, and it's really this little opaque filter that I put in front of my lens, and I find that's the best way to get accurate white balance when setting the white balance using custom white balance function. And so I usually carry that around if I, just in case I really need spot on color. And aside from that, extra batteries, definitely. And
gotta have those.
And now I have this, I also have a little LCD viewfinder because I do a bit of video now too. So if there's some option where I want to actually film something, I'll take that. And what happens is that during the daylight, it's sometimes really hard to see the LCD,
like if
it's bright enough or just to even see if you're in focus. Because when you do a video with these cameras, you have to look at the LCD because the mirror actually pops up so that it only shows your feed through the LCD.
Mm-hmm.
not through, you know, not through the normal viewfinder.
Right.
So so you clip one of those on, and then you get really, you can actually see the LCD much clearer.
It actually,
I have clicks, a whole module.
It attaches to the camera.
Yeah, what happens is you buy the kit, and it's it has a little frame that you like glue. It's kind of, well, not glue it. You kind of peel it and stick it to this frame to the outside of your LCD. So it's this little rectangle that clips on your, well, sticks to your LCD. And then when that's on there, then you clip the whole, you can clip the whole device on or off.
Oh, that's interesting.
So,
okay.
So, but it does leave that little kind of frame stuck to your LCD, so which means it's just this extra little thing stuck to it. It doesn't affect anything else though, but it's very handy. Actually, I have in the gold membership too, I do have a module on HD video using your DSLR cameras, because that's a lot of people start getting interested in taking some good video as well. So I mentioned those LCD viewfinders in there, as well as a couple other accessories that are useful.
Oh, very good. Your courses sound very, very thorough. Sounds like you cover a lot.
Say again?
Sorry. I said it sounds like you cover quite a bit, which is a good thing.
Yes. Well, what I found is, as I was doing it, I decided to just pretty much dump everything I know, like up to that point. And the way I did it is, especially with the gold videos where I've gone into different creative areas that I was interested in, I've made it so that they're separate videos.
Okay.
So people can pick and choose. Like if they're not interested in macro photography, they just skip to the next video. So I've made it so at least it's modular enough to pick out what you're interested in. And so I thought there was no harm in adding topics that not everyone may be interested in, but at least they have it in there. And it's also lifetime membership. So, you know, 10 years down the track, if they haven't canceled the internet, they can, you can look into macro photography.
Canceled the internet. Oh, don't say such things.
So, yeah, so I do have lifetime access for members. So once they join, it's a one-off fee and that's it. So they can just access. So some people find that useful because it's like a resource then. Because, you know, 6 months down the track, they might get a new lens, or they, you know, might want to go try something else out. And they thought, oh, that's right, there was the video on that. And then they go back and check their membership area and refresh their memory. So I think that's one of the real benefits of having online course. I think, I mean, it's great to have one-on-one, you know, and if I could have one-on-one instruction and be able to teach all my members firsthand in person, that would be the ultimate, but I literally can't do that.
Right. There's only one you.
Yeah, there's only one of me, and I just passed the 10,000 member barrier the other day. Like,
congratulations.
My course is sold on a number of platforms, but I have now over 10,000 members around the world taking it. So there's no way I would be able to reach that many people without, you know, online technology and being able to, you know, so people can access it anytime without me being around, really.
Yeah, and that's got to be so fulfilling for you, knowing that you're reaching so many people. And on the flip side, for them, that's got to be, like you said, you're quite a resource, because people don't want to have to go to a million different places to find what they need to know about photography. If they can find one person or one source or a couple sources that are providing information about the different areas of photography, that saves them a whole lot of time of searching and looking around. So, yeah.
I think that's why I actually went to a lot of trouble to put pretty much all my tricks in this course, and that's why I spent a number of months actually planning, like outlining, okay, what do people want to know? And I actually surveyed some people too. Like I put a survey out and asked, what topics are you interested in? So I really hit most of the topics that people wanted to learn about. And also I try to plan it as well. So I really hit the essentials as clear as possible. So really if they sit there, they should have a great understanding by the end of my course without having to go look for, fill in the gaps by going here and there.
Right.
So at least for getting a good grounding in the basics, my goal was to put that across and be as thorough and complete as I could. And then for advanced, you know, if they want to go take their photography further, and, you know, then there certainly be courses out there, and I plan to do some more courses myself where I go more in detail in topics. But at least if they can get, you know, all the core basics in one place so that they can take the camera out and be confident that they can turn their camera off the auto dial and actually know what they're doing. Uh-huh. I mean, that's the real big goal for a beginner.
Yeah.
Pulling that camera out and not just shooting on auto for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And you can still get great photos on auto, but just if you really want to start taking creative control, you do have to shift.
Yeah, you
and,
do.
And, yeah, and my course isn't about learning all those other 10 modes either. Like you get a DSLR camera now, there's like at least 10 or 14 different
around
modes.
Around the circle, yeah.
Yeah, and that's confusing for beginners. Like, okay, what do I turn it on? And if you turn it on sports mode and then you forget and you go take a photo in a different conditions, then it's not going to come out right because the camera thinks you're doing a sports shot. So better to just learn a couple of modes on the camera. And once you know those, that's all you need. So it's really my course is really 80-20. There's, you know, there's 20% of things that will affect most of your photos, you know. It will make the 80% difference, you know. So if you just focus on those core things. A lot of my training is about the core things that make the biggest difference for your photos.
Very good. Very good. Now, I'm going to deviate a little bit off of the outline that I'm working from. I have to ask this question. It's going to put you on the spot a little bit, but as we were talking, it keeps popping up in my head how more and more people are learning how to use these digital cameras. And I'm even thinking back to weddings that I've done where, and you've probably experienced this, where you're trying to get the shot and you look around and everyone else around you has their smartphone up and you kind of have to jostle around just, you know, because you're paid to do a job and everyone around you is taking photos. Some of them have their own digital cameras, and before the night's over, the photos are up on Facebook before you've even gotten home to process the photos. But more and more people are doing that. So my question to you is, where do you see... This is a loaded question, a big question. Where do you see photography heading? The state of professional photography, where do you see that going in the next 10 years, the next 20 years, as this equipment becomes more accessible to everybody?
Well, I think, it's a really important question because... I mean, nowadays people can just go down to their local big box store and pick up these cameras for $500. They can take amazing photographs.
Yeah.
And like the resolution now of some of these sensors, like up to like 24 and 36, and these are like under $1,000 cameras, you know, 24, 36 megapixels. So I think for a professional, like if you're doing a wedding gig or any other gig where potentially you're going to have about 10 other cameras pointing over your shoulder taking
at
the same
least.
Shots is, for one, you're going to have to know your lighting well. And the biggest tip I learned for wedding photography was, I mean, it's a small thing, but it makes a big difference, is to have a good diffuser on your flash. And just having that straight away puts you, you know, above everyone. You know, 9 out of 10 people aren't going to have that, right? That big advantage, so being able to have flattering lighting on your subject on the fly. So I'm not talking about setting up studio lights because this is like an event where it's real time, people are moving around.
Yeah.
So my biggest tip that someone gave to me was get a good diffuser.
Okay.
So you have your external flash and you clip this diffuser on top and straight away you're getting a better quality image than someone who's just using their pop-up flash or just a flash without it. So for one, you have to be on the cutting edge of your technique as far as getting good exposure, using that diffuser to soften your light. But then I think really to compete, you're going to have, I think, to me, I always thought that having albums and something where it's like an added value. Because if you're just going to, that's why I actually did it that way when, back in 2005, I created albums, and the bride saw the album before they even saw the photos.
Okay.
Because it's the story. So your ability as a photographer can't just be capturing, you know, 20 angles and just capturing the whole day, just, you know, as far as just the whole series of stills go. You have to be able to tell the story better than anyone else.
That's a good point.
And I think... I'm still strongly of that opinion. To tell the story better, if you lay it out in storyboard fashion, mm-hmm. where you pull out your best shots. You don't want to make the bride have to work hard looking for your best shots through 300 photos. So it's, I think one mistake is you can't just upload all 600 photos that you took.
Mm-hmm.
You need to, as a professional, know which are your quality shots and power it down to the best 200 or 100 shots. So that's the first step. And then if you can lay it out in a storyboard fashion where you have a nice big spread and you have a couple of little shots in the corner, you know, mm-hmm. framed, there's ways of doing it where you actually every page is a story from the wedding,
mm-hmm.
that tells a moment and captured much better than just a whole, you know, 10 little photos. It's actually arranged. So you have a creative eye and you lay it out that looks just amazing. And then what happens is, ideally, if that's the first presentation that you give to your brides, mm-hmm. or whatever event it is, they see the story straight away. They're captured by it. Like, oh, yes, you've captured that part of my wedding. Oh, that's amazing. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's more than a photograph to me. You're telling a story and a bunch of photographs.
It's very true.
And I think that's really what's going to set photographers apart. And I think it did in the past, and I think that'll continue, where that's going to be your edge. You're going to have to actually be, I think it's designing albums, I think is still a key thing.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Yeah, that's good answer. I was just curious what your take on that is, because I've been talking to other photographers as well, and you know, some are more pessimistic than others. And it's good to keep that in mind, kind of what differentiates, what distinguishes us in our abilities and what we can do, as opposed to just anybody with any camera or a smartphone. This is good. We've been going for quite a while here. I won't hold you too much longer. I know this. We could probably do this for hours. I want to discuss lessons that you've learned over the years. As you've been a professional photographer, I guess, would you share what the most common mistake is that you see other photographers make, or even yourself over the years? You can choose either one.
Okay. Well, I think it goes back to what I was just speaking about. I think the most common mistake would be just to literally hand over a disc of 400 or whatever images,
mm-hmm.
to the couple on the next day, or you know, 2 days later once you've edited them. I think professional photographers will be shooting themselves in the foot, or have been, by just, you know, doing a quick process, image dump, there we go, hand it over on a disc.
Yeah.
You know, these are all the images, without using their professional eye to really sort them and to present them in a way that tells the story better. So I think that goes back to what I was talking about, storyboarding and, you know, creating, you know, value adding an album, something that tells the story better than just a sequence of photographs is I think photographers make them, that's their biggest mistake, if they don't do something beyond just handing a disc over with a whole bunch of images on it.
Yeah, very true. And I've been there. I've made that mistake in years past. And it is certain things you don't know, I guess, until you make the mistake. But then you learn. It's a constant learning process for sure.
Yeah, and I've done that too, to be honest. They just wanted the most budget wedding. They just wanted, you know, $100 maximum. And I said,
right.
Well, you know, all you're going to get for that is, you know, a disc with some photos on it.
Right.
Which is,
right.
I mean, that can happen. And you know, you roll with the punches, as they say.
Yeah. You,
but the happiest brides I had were the ones, mm-hmm. that, you know, literally 2 days later, they have this online album that they can send the link to all friends to.
Mm-hmm.
And also I put music to it. I had this.
Oh, very nice.
I had this software that you could pick a music track. So it really brings out a whole emotional, you know.
Yeah.
Emotional memory of the event, because it's like, it's this amazing music, and then they, you know, a couple of tracks they liked, you know, at the wedding. So you make an effort to find out what music they like too. And so they're just seeing these storyboard pages with, mm-hmm. this music playing in front of them. And then later on, the way it worked is then they choose which pages they want to keep and which ones they want to drop.
Mm-hmm.
And to, for their final album. And then okay. I'd send off a print order and they'd get their, one of those coffee book style, hardbound, you know,
yeah,
albums.
Like a coffee table book.
And
yeah.
That was the final presentation. And, you know, that's, I think that's, they basically become delighted with that, you know. It's, and you stand out from the crowd that way as well, you know, so.
And, you know, yeah. I firmly believe that, and maybe I say this because I'm biased, because I'm a photographer, but I think that the photography is one of the most important aspects of the wedding. And I got married a little less than a year and a half ago. And I remember when we reviewed the photos after the wedding, myself and my husband, we sat down and it was just this special bonding time as we looked through the photos, and there's nothing like it. Now, granted, I'm a little bit of a control freak, so I had the photographer give me all the raw files. Just give me all the raw files, and I'll sort through them and edit them.
I'll process them myself.
Yeah, you know, it was hard, a little bit hard at the wedding because I'm watching them run around. We had a couple of guys, and I wanted to micromanage, but I couldn't because I was the one getting married. But but you're right, it is quite an impact, the way that you deliver the photos to the bride and groom after the wedding, because they sit through it. And they are essentially reliving that wedding. It's such a special, powerful moment. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Actually, a point that you brought up there is reliving it, because quite often we found that the brides on the day, it's almost too much to take it in.
It flies by.
And really, coming back to the photos in the end is like, they're seeing perspectives they never saw. They're reliving moments that passed by way too quick for them to even appreciate.
Absolutely.
Because they had 10 things on their mind at the time.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful thing to be able to capture those moments. So, yeah.
It is. And one thing I didn't realize was that as a bride, it didn't occur to me until the actual wedding day. They sat me outside of the sanctuary. We were in a church, and I had to wait outside until I was able to march in. And so I missed songs that were sung. I missed people marching down the aisle before myself. And so these things I didn't get to see until I was able to review the photos. So and the videos. It's so important.
Yeah. I think photos is definitely key. I mean, it'd be great if every wedding could be professionally videoed as well, but that's another whole scale.
It is.
And another whole podcast in itself.
Yeah, and another whole chunk of change too. It's amazing how quickly these expenses can add up.
And video production is way, that is serious. We did some videos, but we found most brides didn't go for video just because, you know, there was a limit to the budget.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it was a lot of extra to put in there.
Well, I'm going to end with this final question, and then I'm going to give you a chance to tell us where we can find you as far as your courses and your website. But the last question that I will ask is, what is the one thing you wish you knew that you know now when you first started taking photos as a professional photographer?
As a professional?
Yes.
Well, I'd say the professional was the wedding stuff, really. This is really specific to event photography.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that doesn't affect me as much now because I'm mostly doing photography for teaching. But I had a very stressful wedding once because I only had one camera body with the first wedding or a couple of weddings I did.
Yeah.
And I had the Canon 5D, and I was taking photographs. It was this lovely couple from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in Honolulu, some of the beach parks in Honolulu, and it was getting sunset. So I did all the ceremony, and I took some beach shots at sunset, and then I took some more in the park. And then when I was taking some final shots, and I actually wanted to go back and take some more sunset shots just as it got really dark, you know, dark with the orange sky. And I suddenly noticed that inside my camera, it was black. I couldn't see through the viewfinder.
Oh, no.
And I had no idea what was going on.
Oh, no.
And I tried to switch it on and off. And
yeah.
It was just a viewfinder.
Worst nightmare.
There's no, like, electronic. It's not an electronic viewfinder. It's, like, optical.
Oh, my goodness.
So I kind of, like, leant over to the side and checked by my camera bag and took the lens off and found that the mirror had fallen out. And it was a known feature of Canon 5Ds in humid climates.
Are you
kidding
me?
Somehow the glue had come loose.
I didn't know that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and And they replaced it for free. But the point is, it couldn't really function without the mirror because you can't see where you're aiming the camera.
Right.
And I kind of, we kind of walked back and I said, oh, well, we've got plenty of photos for the day. You know, we have enough. And I took one more shot, I took another couple of shots just totally blind because I didn't have a mirror in my camera anymore. And actually, one of those came out all right.
Wow.
But the biggest, you know, lessons, immediately I went and ordered a second body as a backup. So my biggest tip for any event photographer, always have a second camera, second body.
Absolutely, I second that.
You never know. If something goes wrong, the electrics fail, who knows? You cannot be in a position where you don't have a backup.
Oh, that gives me goosebumps. That's like a photographer's worst nightmare right there.
Oh, so I was so fortunate it happened at the end of the day, literally, rather than if I had been caught at the beginning of the ceremony and it had happened, I would have been dead. So I wouldn't be speaking to you today.
Yeah,
I'm bankrupt.
I've seen the end result of that on, you know, judge shows, Judge Judy. I've seen that, where they have the photographer there and then the bride and groom were husband and wife now and things didn't go as they were supposed to go. It can get ugly. It can get messy really quick. Yeah.
I know. So I was fortunate and learnt my lesson instantly. So if anyone else wants to do event photography, just take that one seriously.
Well, thank you so much. I want to give you a chance to tell us where we can find you. I know you mentioned your blog, your website earlier, but if you wanted to tell us again the best places to reach you, and we will include those in the show notes as well.
Okay. And, well, the best place is my main website for my course, which is easydslr.com. And I'll give you the actual direct address for your show notes where they can get some free tips too. I have a page where you can just sign up for some free tips. A little bit. I have some videos where I tell you a little bit more about my background and I give you some excerpts of parts of the course. Particularly there's an excerpt from my composition video, which some of the tips in there are useful even if you're using an iPhone. So you'll be able to get some free tips there. And my other place is easydslr.com. And then I have a blog, which is digitalphotocentral.com. And there I just keep people up to date with, you know, news about new cameras and any little tips that I come across that people might be interested in. But definitely for the actually learning photography, my main website is the place to go at easydslr.com.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you again just for taking time to chat with us. And I really, really appreciate it. And I know the listeners do as well.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's been great talking to you.